Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Out.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player,
Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he can fix me, and change me and get me over here trying to do better. I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions. Took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon, that was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
All right, today's podcast is titled Floor College / Suzu. Floor College. Anyway, yesterday, let's pick up from yesterday. Yesterday we covered barometers. I share with you that I use YouTube as one of my primary barometers to see what kind of trends are happening out there locally, statewide, nationally, and globally. And I have another barometer today. Now, this is, and this ties into Floor College, which we'll be talking about that here in a few minutes. And what's a Suzu got to do with a Floor College? All right. So the barometer that I'm reading today is Yahoo. Yahoo is probably my go-to source for news. And the headline I'm reading here, I'm going to read the headline and get into the article. And then you can look it up on the story yourself. It comes through NBC News. But the headline here is, four dead after suspect opens fire on officer serving an eviction notice in Arizona. I'll go into the article. A law enforcement officer and suspect were among four people who were killed Thursday in Arizona after the officer tried to serve an eviction notice, authorities said. Tucson Police Sergeant Richard Gradelis identified the officer in a statement as Pima County Constable Deborah Martinez Garibay, age 43. He did not identify the suspect or the two other people who were killed. The constables at the complex, the constables and a complex employee were serving a notice at an apartment complex, complex northeast of downtown Tucson, Arizona, when the shots were fired shortly after 11 a.m. Thursday, Gradelis said. Authorities were investigating, and additional details were not immediately available. In a statement, Sharon Bronson from the chair of Pima County Board of Supervisors said the constables perform a difficult and important job for the county, for the people of this county. They often encounter people at their most vulnerable and emotional, yet all perform their duties with professionalism and compassion. I am heartbroken at this terrible tragedy, and I will keep Constable Martinez and all who knew and loved her in my thoughts, said Bronson. Send me that article. So now, 20 minutes ago, I didn't know that, I didn't know about the story. I was just thumbing through my phone and came across this. So we're going to use this news story, we're going to use this as our barometer for today as we get into Floor College and Isuzu. For those of you who know what Isuzu is, if you don't know what Isuzu is, we'll explain it here shortly. But we want to take a look at this article as a barometer and some metrics involved with this. All right, number one, and in my program notes on Blog Talk Radio, I have a few of them, but number seven, I just added this on after we started the live stream. There's a distinction between a house and a home. A house is a physical structure. It can be anything. That house is something. It could be a shed, a shack, a mansion. The Taj Mahal in India houses a tomb. Buckingham Palace houses part of the government in England. The house that you live in is a place where you physically live, but it's not a home. Now, a home is intangible. And I guess one of the best ways I can relate this, if you're a parent, wherever the parents are, that's home. You know, let's say you grew up in Butte, Montana, in mom or dad's house or mom's house or dad's house, whatever it was. You know, that was where you know, and I'm doing this with rose-colored glasses, you know, place where you can, your favorite meal might be served, or a place where you have refuge, safety, protection, good times and all that. That's a home. It's emotional, it's psychological. And if mom and dad or the family moves from there to Nome, Alaska or Bangor, Maine, that's where the home has moved to. They just left one house. But a lot of people get caught up and confusing or confusing a house and a home to be the same thing. No, they're different. The house is tangible, but the home, you know, it's intangible. So let's look at some common denominators here. Let's look at some of the metrics on here. All right, once again, the headline, 4 dead. All right, here we go. 4 dead after suspect opens fire on an officer serving an eviction in Arizona. So let's read this. And this article is, but we're going to look for some metrics here and a common denominator. All right. A law enforcement officer and a suspect were among 4 people who were killed Thursday in Arizona after the officer tried to serve an eviction notice. All right. I can guarantee you this. The law enforcement officer who served the notice, person who the notice was served on, and the 2 other people that were shot dead, the common denominator between all 4, matter of fact, if anybody can guess that, I don't want to give it away. 619-768-2945. If you can give me the common denominator of those 4 people, and I'm not talking about they ended up dead, that's not the common denominator. If you can give me the common denominator of those 4 people, 619-768-2945, call up, press 1, and let me hear what your answer is. All right. Now, there's some other people in this story. Tucson Police Sergeant Richard Gradius identified the officer in the state in a statement as Pima County Constable Deborah Martinez Garibay. Now, she was 43. So she's in the – what's the combinator? We've added a fifth person on here. He's among the living. Tucson Police Chief. Now, what does Tucson Police Chief Sergeant Cadelius, he's got something in common with the 4 dead people. So we got 5. What do these 5 people, what's the common denominator with these 5 people? There's a common denominator there. 619-768-2945 is the number to call. If somebody can give me the common denominator with of those 5 people, 4 dead, 1 alive. Let me find this. Let's see. Okay, here's the 6th person. In a statement, Sharon Bronson, the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, said that the constables perform a difficult and important job for the people of this county. So we got Sharon Bronson among the living. We got Police Sergeant Richard Cadelius, also among the living, and 4 dead people. So 2 living, 2 dead, 4 dead, There's six people. What's the common denominator of those six people? And this is when we put it. It's not that they lived or worked in the same county. That's not it. 619-768-2945. Press 1 if you know the common denominator of those six people. Now, I'll throw out a clue. The clue's in that headline. But that's just a clue. Might not be a good clue, but it's a clue. So while we're waiting on, matter of fact, I'm going to give you guys like 2 minutes. My board's got to get back up. I just don't want to. I want to make people think. Now, you can guess any answer. But what did those four people? Matter of fact, you know what? There's a clue. Well, 619-768. You got 2 minutes and 50 seconds. Because I don't want to give it away. I want you guys to use that mental muscle called your brain. Use that. Let's see what kind of answers they have up there.
Made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. there's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends."
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have five.
Okay. Today's podcast is titled Florida College, and all the audios I've been playing are for the purposes of dropping clues, because I wanted to see where you guys are, if we can figure out this common denominator. Now, the article that I read from is headlined, "Four Dead After Suspect Opens Fire on Officer Serving Eviction Notice in Arizona." Now, the reason why this is happening, maybe not that to that extreme throughout the United States, but there are a lot of people that do get violent when facing eviction or foreclosure. So I'm looking at this matter of fact, let's see. Type into your search engine eviction shootouts. Let's just go with shootouts. Oh, shootings. Eviction shootings. All right. Here's what comes back on my phone. Now, we already talked about one that happened in Tucson, Arizona. Here's another one, Sarasota. I guess this here is in Sarasota, Florida. This year, Sarasota eviction notice leads to fatal deputy involved shooting. Let's see. Florida man accused of shooting, killing a man who was attempting to serve a notice. Let's see. All right. What else do they have here? Uh, hears when somebody accused of shooting kids during an eviction. Another article, deputy shot as they tried to serve eviction notice. Let's see. The suspect, Martin Worth, was shot and killed. This is another location. Here's another shooting in Montana. Man injured in Tewittsville, shooting faces eviction. Here's another one in Modesto, California. Let's see, NAACP calls for answers at the deadly Sarasota eviction. Texas A&M shooting, eviction notice allegedly caused Thomas Alton Caffell allegedly opened fire on a constable. So, there's quite a few of these. Question is, what is the common denominator of the living and the dead? And today's podcast is titled Floor College. Okay, 5:13, your mic is open.
Was it that they were all black?
No, you had probably overwhelmingly more white people getting shot and killed in these incidents than anything else. No, that's a good guess, though, but no, that's not it. Care to take another guess?
No.
Okay. Well, I'll give you points for attempting. The common denominator is none of these people knew how to build a house. Not one. The person, if like, these people that the eviction notice that was served on, had they known, they wouldn't have been renting anyway. If you know how to build, you really don't have to rent. Or if you, for whatever reason, you are renting, you have enough of a skill set where, and that's why I played that Neely Fuller piece, where people used to get together on a Saturday or a weekend and build those shotgun houses. So none of the people that served the notice, none of the people that were getting served, none of the people that got shot and killed, including the collateral damage of people who got shot and killed, none of those people knew how to build a house. The reason why I played the last audio with Solar Cabin on it, now this, the primary article, and I, some of these shootings and killings happen in Montana, they happen in different places. But the original article took place in Arizona, and that's why I'll play this piece again. It took place in Tucson, Arizona. I'm going to play this audio, and then I'm going to tie it into what we're talking about here.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in...
All right, so, you know, I stopped that too soon. But anyway, he purchased an acre or so, or more than that. And, well, let's say put it at acre. In Arizona for, what, $400? Like, once again, an acre is the size of a football field. Now, this shooting took place in, let me get it right. I lost the article. Wait a minute. Let's see. This, all right, hold it. Arizona eviction shooting. Arizona, because this happens. Eviction shooting. Okay. Tucson, Arizona. All right, let's do some homework right now. Tucson, Arizona. Okay. Now, as Lamar Alexander just said, the first thing you need to do is you need to find a piece of land. So Tucson, Arizona, is in Pima County, Arizona, that borders Mexico. That county has, what's the population of the county? All right, it has 1 million people. All right, so just off the surface of things, that's a lot of people for one county. All right, let's go by what I go by. I look for counties that have a population of probably no more than 25,000. Let's say on the high end, 30,000 people for a county. So let's look up, let's airlift this thing. We're going to keep it in Arizona, but counties of Arizona. Because if you hit Arizona right, you can buy some land at some incredibly cheap prices. Like I say, Lamar, he bought an acre for, what, about $400. Okay, so, all right, here's what you do. In on your phones, computers, laptops, or whatever, type in county maps. County maps, Arizona. You want to bring that up on your map so you can get some type of a visual. You can see where he this four people died in Pima County. So I'm not living in Pima County, or I'm not buying land in Pima County. And here's also put least populated. And this all leads, and we're going to tie this into Floor College today. Least populated county in Arizona. That's what we want. Least populated county in Arizona. All right. And... let's see. Arizona county population. All right, we're looking for the least. All right, that's all right. Okay, here we go. All right, I guess this goes from the top to the bottom. Maricopa County, Arizona, has over 4 million people. Pima County, where four people were killed, That has a population of over 1 million people. Now, let's go down to, I think, the least populated county in Arizona is Greenlee. So what did I say? It's my house barometer, the metric that I use to determine where am I going to buy land. Because once we're going by what Lamar Alexander said, the first thing you need to do is buy some land. He didn't say buy a house. He said the first place that you buy some land, okay, and he gave out numbers. So he threw out, he bought a parcel of land somewhere in Arizona for $400 for an entire acre. That's a football field, all right? Now, my metric, once again, is 26 to 30, no more than 30,000 people countywide. So in Arizona, there are two counties that fit my criteria: La Paz County, Arizona, and Greeley, California. La Paz County, Arizona, has a population of 21,315 people. There's a lot more. There's less rules and regulations in La Paz County and Greenlee County than there is in Pima County, which has got over 1 million people. Once again, the numbers. The more people, the more problems. The more people, the higher density. The more people, the more government. The more government, less freedom. So I try to find a place that gives me the maximum amount of freedom with the least amount of government. Now, this is just me. All right. Now, so in Arizona, you know, instead of being in Pima County, like I say, I'm not dealing with anything. Now, there might be an exception here on one of these counties, but I'll go through that in a minute. Okay. So La Paz County, let's click on La Paz County. Now, La Paz County's got a little bit over, let's just do it this way. You can either put in La Paz or Greenlee County. Greenlee County is the least populated county in Arizona. And let's do the Wikipedia on it, right? Greenlee County, Arizona. Okay, Greenlee County, Arizona. All right, when you look at it on a map, it borders New Mexico. All right. Greenlee County has a total population of 563 people. And then I'm on Wikipedia with this. And then let's look at the communities. Okay. Clifton, which is a town in Greenlee County, which is the county seat, that has a population of 3,933 people. Okay. Oh, by the way, Greenlee County only has two towns. I like that. Towns, the more freedom you have in that county. Now, there's some villages there. But a village and a town legally are two different things. All right. Now, the other town in Greenlee County has a population of, which is, what's the name of the town? Duncan, Arizona. Duncan, Arizona has 694 people. I like that. Okay. Now, they also have four ghost towns, but we're not going to talk about ghost towns opportunities. Then there's census-designated places. I like those places. Let's look at Franklin, Arizona. And I love it. Franklin, Arizona has a population of 75 people. If you ever catch me in Arizona, look for places like Franklin. That's where you're most likely to run into me. 75 people, everybody knows everybody. You can probably sleep with your door open. You can probably, if you got a pickup truck or whatever, you can have the keys in the ignition, leave it there for a whole, and nobody's going to bother you, a whole week. Franklin might not even have any police. Because if you don't act right in Franklin, and you burn bridges in Franklin, you will be ostracized by the community. And you'll leave on your own because you've been basically banished. It's unfortunate what happened to these people, but in a town like Franklin, Arizona, population 75 people. Now, if you're living in this town of Franklin, no, there's not a Walmart there. No, there's no bus line there. City bus line. No, there's no metro subway system there. But you know that going in. You know that going in. Communities like that, there's a higher degree of social capital, which, once again, the higher the population. The people in Franklin are more self-sufficient. You'll run into more people that built their homes. That's why they lived in Franklin. Because they just, the rules and regulation, the zoning and all this, that, or the other, it's you know, they don't want to live in a Pima County or Maricopa County. But most people are addicted to the comfort and conveniences of a big city. Therefore, you know, they have their high populations. In a place like Franklin, Arizona, your neighbors will make sure. Matter of fact, I'm sure in a place like Franklin, Arizona, there's no social services office. Because real social security comes from the social capital you have within your family and or neighbors, or a combination of the two. And the the town where this shooting happened, I mean, in a place like Franklin, Arizona, there's probably no rent court. I mean, theoretically, you can get evicted, but more, like I said, it's a different mindset, different culture. And if you need to go to a larger city, you know, if you need to go to Tucson or Scottsdale within the state of Arizona, you can still go to those places. But if you want to lead a debt-free life, and there's a whole lot more Franklin, Arizonas, all across the United States, there's a whole bunch of those towns. There are more of those towns than a Scottsdale or Tucson, Arizona, where this happened. But I guarantee you, the common denominator of the four people that were killed and the two people, you know, the county supervisor and the guy that works for the police office, we're talking about those six people. Anybody that I read, names I read, the common denominator is none of them knew how to build a house, a debt-free house. But if you go to a place like Franklin, Arizona, it's common in those places. So that's where Flora College comes into. We'll be teaching for free. All right. Going by Lamar Alexander, we're starting off with We'll have offline sessions. They'll be online, but not in this, not on the Blog Talk thing, where we'll do a Zoom call, and there's some handout material so everybody can be looking at the same thing. So we're going to be looking at the plans for a house, a tiny house. And then we're going to break that down. And I'm giving you the first part here. This is all part of the Suzu. But we don't forget about money and all that. We're just talking about how we're going. You'll be shown. I'll send you a copy of the plans. And then we're going to, the foundation, the floors, the walls, the roof, and all that other stuff. But we're starting off with the floor. How many different parts are there to a floor? And we'll all have the same information written down. You'll see the pictures of it. There's some videos that I'm going to instruct you to watch. What are the different parts of the floor? How many parts are there to a floor? How many parts to the floor that will be building as by the plans that you'll receive? And then how much would it cost to build that floor? That's where we're starting with. So if you're interested in that, and that's all part of our Floor College Suzu. No money's being exchanged or nothing like that. Or anything else is strictly, all right, here is the end goal. All right. Now let's just break the house down to its parts. How many parts are there to a house? We're going to start with the floor. How many parts are there to this floor based on these plans down to how many screws that we need? Remember, carpentry is primarily two things, cutting and fastening. What tools will we need to make cuts? What will we need to fasten it together to make this floor? So hit me up, and we'll enroll you into Floor College. It's not difficult. Anybody of any age can do it. If Lauren Nelson can do it at 10, somebody can do it at 110. So we can have, now we're not going to save the world, but by having this information, by learning, because we're going to go, after we go through Floor College, and we're going to go through Wall College, same thing, how to make a wall, how to make a door, the windows, how to make a roof, all that, but we're starting off with the floor. Why? Because, in my opinion, these four people could have been living. Had one person intercede and say, well, wait a minute now. Before all this happens, evictions, you out on the street and all that, so you want to get it all stressed out. Look, let's take some time and teach you how to build a house. You'll own it, and you don't have to worry about getting evicted again. See, I very seriously doubt that conversation happened. And none of the people who commented from the sheriff's office or the county supervisor's office, they didn't have that conversation. Sounds like, because I'm sure there are no shortages of religious organizations out in Pima County, Arizona. Matter of fact, hold up. Help me out here, people. Look up a number of churches in Pima County, Arizona. Number of churches, if we can find it. And Primer County, Arizona. I mispronounced it. PIMA, Pima County, Arizona. Let's see, Pima County, Arizona churches. All right, I see Church Direct, but I'm trying to get a statistic. Let me put in stats. Okay. No, I didn't. Okay. All right. Stats. Number of churches. Number of churches in Pima County, Arizona. Okay. All right, well, let's see what we have here. Okay. Diocese of Tucson. Well, all right, let's go with this. All right. I might be pronouncing this wrong. Catholic churches. All right, well, let's go from this one particular religion. And they have a map here. In Arizona, but not the whole state either, and not in every county. The population, all right, in total, there are, all right, out of 1,450,000 people there in Arizona, at least in sections of Arizona, there are an estimated 300,000 Roman Catholics who are served by 78 parishes, dozens of missions, 25 Catholic schools, 6 member agencies of the Catholic Community Services of Southern Arizona, and the Catholic Foundation of Tucson. All right, let me read this, and this is just Roman Catholics in Arizona. And this is not the whole state. We're talking about out of the county of Arizona, La Paz, Yuma, Pima, Cochise, Graham, Greenlee, Gila, and Pino County. That's just some of the counties in Arizona, not all of them. But out of those counties that I just read, which has a population of over 1,450,000 people, there are estimated 300,000-plus Roman Catholics, once again served by 78 parishes, dozens of missions, 25 Catholic schools, 6 member agencies of the Catholic Community Services of Southern Arizona. And none of them – now, I'm sure within that amount of people, somebody knew how to build a house. But the 4 people that got killed, they didn't know. So thus, Floor College. we're having that absolutely free. Anybody of any age can participate, and it's just real simple. And now we've got some handout material, which I'd have to, you know, text it to you, email it to you, with diagrams. Okay, you have these are the parts of a floor. You know, here's what they're called. This is how many parts you have to a floor. And then we have offline exercises where, you know, we put, you know, how to cut it, prefab it, you know, what do we need? What materials do we need? You know, are we going to use screws? Are we going to use nails? What kind of fasteners? You know, real basic fundamental stuff, but we start, forget about the walls, forget about building the Taj Mahal, forget about building the birdhouse. No. We're starting off with a floor. It won't take us long to get through it. And then from there, we're going to build on that walls on up until we have it completed. And this will be in the form of a Suzu, which will be a small group of people. We might cap it. I know definitely no more than 10, but we might cap it at about 5. My mentor is Devin. He's doing 7. 5 to 7 people. That'll be it for the Suzu. You don't need now to get in the Suzu. You don't. All you need to do is just contact me and say you want to be a part of it, because then we'll do a Zoom call, and I'll email you the support material. So we're all looking. Here's our goal. Here are the plans to build this specific building. It's a tiny house. All right. And then we're going to break it down, starting with each part. We're going to dissect it. And this is based on the book, The First 20 Hours. We're going to dissect the house, but we're starting off with the floor because the floor does have parts to it. And then to put it all together, you know, they're other parts that we're going to need so it can actually be a floor. So we're starting off there. Anybody will be able to get this way of learning how to build. Anyway, all right, 5:13. Any questions? Comments? And we're looking for Robin. Robin, if you're out there. Hold up, my board's frozen here. Okay, waiting for the board to unstick. All right. Okay. Oops. I just lost somebody. Okay. Anyway, but Floor College is a, you know, it's a Suzu. All right, so just let me know, and then what I'll do is I'll either text you or email you the written materials that we have. It's not much. And then we're starting with the floor by Zoom call, so we're all on the same page. And then the action steps needed. Okay. All right, 5:13, I see you pop back in, so that's good. But matter of fact, let me look at something here. Let's look up, is homelessness a problem in Arizona? So let's look up homeless Arizona, or homeless in Arizona. And let's see, does Arizona have, all right, according to what I'm reading here online, Arizona is among the top five states in the nation for lack of affordable housing options for residents living below the federal poverty line. The number of homeless youth ages 18 to 24 has increased over time, making up 8% of the total homeless population in Phoenix. Phoenix is not another city I would recommend that you live in. Let's see, what city in Arizona has the most homeless? All right, that's Phoenix is the largest number of people experience homelessness, with over 3,000 people. Mesa and Glendale follow with 451 people and 456 respectively. Oh, you know what? I got a 60 Minutes piece up, guys. I want you to hear. We're going to play it right after this.
Can we make just one big choir? You know, in choirs, we got a rock.
That's how it works. That's how.
right, today we're talking about floor couch. We're going to get back into it in a moment. But I just ran across, before I play this next audio and open up the phone lines here, Alabama pastor arrested for watering flowers. Let me read another headline on this story. Black pastor arrested while watering his neighbor's flowers. If you read the article, this guy lived right across the street, so he was being a good neighbor and got arrested for watering flowers. Childersburg pastor arrested while watering his neighbor's flowers. NBC News, black Alabama pastor says he was wrongfully arrested while watering his neighbor's flowers. Okay. Listen to this. We're going to come back to the story and back to floor cause we're going to tie all this in. Where you live is very important.
My home is not for sale, and if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe.
What Jim Salit is talking about is the city of Lakewood, Ohio, taking his house, his home, through eminent domain to make way for a high-priced condo that will pay the city more in taxes than he and his wife Joanne do. And he says he's not going to take it lying down.
It's the close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Ed Bradley.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Those stories and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes.
Just about everyone knows that under a process called eminent domain, the government can and does seize private property for public use to build a road or a courthouse. But did you know the government can also seize your land for private use if they can prove that doing it will serve what is called the public good? Cities across the country have been using eminent domain to force people off their land so that private developers can build more expensive homes and offices, which will pay more in property taxes than the buildings they are replacing. Under eminent domain, the government buys your property, paying you what is determined to be fair market value. But now, people who don't want to sell their homes at any price just to see their land go to another private owner are fighting back.
The bottom line is this is morally wrong, what they're doing here. This is our home, and we're going to stay here, and I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
Jim and Joanne Salit are refusing to sell the home they've lived in for 38 years in a quiet neighborhood of single-family houses in Lakewood, Ohio, just outside Cleveland. The city of Lakewood is trying to use eminent domain to force the Salits out to make way for more expensive condominiums. But the Salits are in effect telling the town, hell no, they won't go.
We talked about this when we were dating. I used to point to the houses and say, Joanne, one of these days we're going to have one of these houses. And I meant it. And I worked hard.
What'd you do?
I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And we worked very hard for this. And paid it off. And we said, oh, we've got it. We paid off our home. I retired. And now we're going to spend the rest of our days here and pass this on to our children.
But Lakewood's mayor, Madeline Kane, has other plans. She wants to tear down the Salit's home, plus 55 homes around it, along with four apartment buildings and more than a dozen businesses, so that private developers can build high-priced condominiums and a high-end shopping mall, and thus raise Lakewood's property tax base.
This is a project.
The mayor told us she sought out a developer for the project because Lakewood's aging tax base has been shrinking, and the city simply needs more money.
This is about Lakewood's future. Lakewood cannot survive without a strengthened tax base. Is it right to consider this a public good? Absolutely.
What you're saying effectively is that the Salit's neighborhood has to be sacrificed for the greater good of the city of Lakewood.
I guess I'm saying that that neighborhood is being asked to, and it's difficult and it's unfortunate that they are being asked to give up their home.
They want this whole area because of the view of the park.
Well, it's a beautiful view.
It is an awesome view. They know it's gorgeous, and they want it. It's that simple.
This whole area is called Scenic Park, but that's the problem. Because it is so scenic, it's a prime place to build upscale condominiums. With great views over the Rocky River, those condos will be a cinch to sell.
But the condos can't go up unless the city can remove the Solites and their neighbors through eminent domain. And to legally invoke eminent domain, the city had to certify that this scenic park area is really, quote, blighted.
We're not blighted. This is an area that we absolutely love. This is a close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And, Mike, you don't know how humiliating this is to have people tell you you live in a blighted area and how degrading this is.
You're the mayor. You know the place. Tell me what is blighted about that area.
The term blighted is a statutory word. It really doesn't have a lot to do with whether or not your home is painted. It is a legal statutory term.
Meaning?
That is used to describe an area. And the question is whether or not that area can be used for a higher and better use.
What does that mean, a higher and better use? What's higher and better than a home?
The term blight is used to describe whether or not the structures generally in an area meet today's standards.
And it's the city that sets those standards. So Lakewood set a standard for blight that would include most of the homes in the neighborhood. A home could be considered blighted if it doesn't have the following.
3 bedrooms, 2 baths, an attached 2-car garage, and central air. Now this community is over 100 years old. Who has all those things?
You mean it's blighted if it doesn't have 3 bedrooms?
Those things I just told you. That's the criteria. And it's ridiculous.
You don't have central air?
No, and we don't need it because of the air. We always have a breeze.
Sure.
Right off Lake Erie, the breeze comes right through here all the time. We counted all the attached garages in Lakewood. There's 20 in the whole city.
We counted 20.
And by the way, we got up at a meeting and told the mayor and all 7 council members their houses are blighted according to this criteria.
My understanding is that using the criteria that are in place, more than 90% of the houses in Lakewood could be deemed blighted, including the houses of the mayor and of every one of the city council members. True? Do you have 2 bathrooms?
No.
Blight. 2-car garage?
No.
Blight. Is the garage attached?
No.
Blight. And your lot size is under 5,000 square feet?
Oh, well under.
You've called that area a cute little neighborhood. You didn't call it a cute little blighted neighborhood. I mean, you and I know that it's not a blighted neighborhood.
I would never personally walk that neighborhood and indicate that that neighborhood is not attractive or, I mean, I would never say that.
It's a cute little neighborhood.
It is a cute little neighborhood. You'll get me to say it on the record. It is a cute little neighborhood.
Cute, maybe, but without those new condos, it won't produce enough property taxes to satisfy the mayor and the city council.
That's no excuse for taking my home. My home is not for sale, and if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe in the whole country, not only Ohio, but this is rampant all over the country. It's like a plague.
This is a nationwide epidemic. We have documented more than 10,000 instances of government taking property from one person to give it to another in just the last 5 years.
Dana Berliner and Scott Bullock are attorneys at a libertarian nonprofit group called the Institute for Justice, which has filed suit on behalf of the Solites against the city of Lakewood. They claim that taking private property this way is unconstitutional.
It is fundamentally wrong and contrary to the Constitution for the government to take property from one private owner and hand it over to another private owner just because the government thinks that person is going to make more productive use of the land.
Everyone knows that property can be taken for a road, but nobody thinks that property can be taken to give it to their neighbor or the large business down the street for their economic benefit. People are shocked when they hear that this is going on around the country.
And it's not just people's homes that are the targets in these eminent domain cases. The Institute for Justice has also filed suit against the city of Mesa, Arizona, to save Randy Bailey's brake repair shop, the shop he got from his father and hopes someday to pass on to his son. The city of Mesa, citing the need for redevelopment, is trying to force Bailey to relocate to make way for an Ace Hardware store that would look better and pay more taxes.
Redevelopment to me is, work with the existing people there and redevelop.
Right.
Not, you get out, we're bringing this guy in.
Bailey's Brake Service has been on this corner for more than 30 years.
In Mesa, this is the corner, Main Street and Country Club. There's not a better corner in this city.
And business has been pretty good down the years?
Business has been awesome.
Now, what used to be in all of this property? I mean, everything else has disappeared.
The city come in and got immediate possession and started demolishing it, making it dirt.
The city has made dirt out of 3 restaurants and 4 businesses that once stood on this 5-acre lot.
And it's not just business properties that they're doing this on. You know, they wiped out 8 people's homes over here. You know, your home ain't even safe.
Bailey told us his neighbors let the city buy them out, but he's refusing to sell.
I'm standing in their way. I'm their thorn in their side.
A thorn in the side of Ken Linhart, who owns the Ace Hardware store a few blocks away. Linhart wants a much bigger store. He could have negotiated with Bailey, but instead, he convinced the city of Mesa to try to buy Bailey's land through eminent domain and then sell it to him.
The city of Mesa wants to move Mr. Bailey about a block away, and from what I understand, it's going to be a new building, new equipment, moving expenses, and everything set up for him. I don't see how Mr. Bailey's going to get hurt.
You can't replace a business in the same location. This place was built in 1952 as a brake and front end shop. I don't care where you move into City Mesa, it would never be the same.
So Bailey went to Linhart looking for a way to stay on his corner.
I tried to go to him and see if we couldn't work something out on this, and he told me, no, there ain't room for you there. We're going to let the city just take care of you.
Did you ever sit down and try to negotiate with him?
No, I never did.
Redevelopment seems to me to make obvious good sense, but the right of eminent domain to take one man's private property, Randy Bailey, to give it, in effect, to Ken Linhart for his private property.
It happens all over the country. Practically any town you want to go to, they're redeveloping their town centers.
Right.
Now, are we going to sit in Mesa, Arizona, and have our town center decay? As a citizen of Mesa, I don't want that to happen.
If I'd had a for sale sign out there, it'd have been a whole different deal. And for them to come in and tell me how much my property is worth and for me to get out because they're bringing in somebody else when I own the land is unfounded to me. It don't even sound like the United States.
And this isn't happening just in small towns. Right here in New York City, a few blocks away from Times Square, New York State has forced a man to sell land on that corner over there that his family had owned for more than 100 years. And what's going up instead? A courthouse? A school? Nope. The new headquarters of the New York Times.
It seems the world's most prestigious newspaper wants to build a new home on this block. But Stratford Wallace and the block's other property owners did not want to sell. Wallace told us the newspaper never tried to negotiate with him. Instead, the Times teamed up with a major real estate developer, and together they convinced the state to use eminent domain to force Wallace out by declaring the block blighted.
I challenge them. This is not blighted property, nor is this property over here blighted.
But New York State Supreme Court disagreed. The court ruled that the newspaper's new headquarters would eliminate blight, and that even though a private entity, the New York Times, is the main beneficiary, improving the block would benefit the public. New York Times executives would not talk to us about it on camera. Back in Lakewood, Ohio, Jim and Joanne Salid are still waiting for their court decision. Most of their neighbors have agreed to sell if the project goes ahead, but the Salids plus a dozen others are hanging tough.
I thought I bought this place, but I guess I just leased it until the city wants it. That's what makes me very angry. This is my dream home, and I'm going to fight for it.
Now the fight is moving to the ballot box. Lakewood residents opposed to the development have gathered enough signatures to force a citywide referendum on it come November.
That story originally came out, I was in back in the 70s, or when I was in college. But that has been going on all from coast to coast, particularly in your larger, primarily, or let me break it down this way. Out of the 19,500 municipalities in the United States, I'm giving out some numbers here, 86% of the population of the United States occupies, like, what, 5% of the land mass. So, you know what, if you avoid most, the 10 most populated cities in the United States, not counties, but 10, because you've got 19,500 municipalities. There are more communities than that, but that's the ones that are municipal with charters. And there are over 40,000 zip codes. I would suggest you do what you want to do, but eliminate living in the 100 and what one the out of the 19,500 municipalities. Stay away from the out of that, let's say 195. Let me have a more conservative number. Okay. All right, I would say, you know what, 10% of that figure, stay away from, there's 1,950 towns. If you stay out of those cities as a primary residence, you should be okay, right? Then you'll be living in what I call the real United States. However, most Americans are, matter of fact, Franklin, Arizona. Think about these high-profile killings of black men. Have you ever heard anything happen to a black man or anybody else from Franklin, Arizona, population, 51? Or Summit, Oklahoma, I've been there a couple of times. They might have 100 people, mind you, might have. Highland Beach, Maryland, and Anne Arundel County, I've been there twice. They've got about a population of maybe 51 people. Most of murders of homicides of not only black folks, but white folks too. My theory on it, not even theory, you take a place like Chicago, D.C., New York, L.A., St. Louis, all those places, we're not supposed to be living that close together. We can take everybody on this planet, put them in the state of Texas, and everybody would have at least 1 or 2 acres of land to themselves. That's what the people... There's a lot of space available. And on the planet, when you come to all living things, 99% of the living beings on the planet, creatures, 99% of them live underwater. That's how abundant this is. So we have an abundance of everything, but a lot of us have a scarcity mindset. But anyway, that 60 Minutes piece, and I spoke to Randy Bailey once, but the brake shop closed down because I would like to bring him on here and get an update. But these larger municipalities are really, they're ravenous for cash. You know, some of these larger cities, they have unionized government employees and all this other stuff on a local level. Now, before I go to the phone lines here, what is happening, and I'm going off of some information that somebody sent me. Between what you heard that, you know, as Jim Salit said, and matter of fact, when you get a chance, as soon as possible, go to YouTube and type in 60 Minutes Eminent Domain. 60 Minutes Eminent Domain, and you'll get the whole video on the 60 Minutes piece I play here, the audio portion of it. So you can actually take it, you know, you can see what Jim Salit and his wife look like and all that stuff. But if you see the neighborhood of the Salits back then, okay, because he was up in age then. But we're talking about a clean-cut American air, apple pie neighborhood, white picket fence neighborhood was deemed to be blighted. And as the then mayor said on 60 Minutes, she even said blight is, according to the code in Lakewood, what do you call it, Ohio, it's a legal term, but she said it herself, it is not a blight, you know, not grass was cut, everybody's grass was cut. You know, they have it in there so that, you know, developers can come in. And we'll have to do a follow-up on that. But as I'm going from, let's see. I got a text here. I don't want to butcher it. So, well, put it this way. What you got, immigrants coming into the country, that's politicized. One idea I have out of this text is, you need to start thinking outside the box. If you're struggling in New York City or Chicago or Seattle, Washington, you need to think outside the box. And which is what a lot of tiny houses are doing or whatever. But, all right, enough of all that. Just one little aside here. I'm reading a headline on Yahoo News. Police arrest Alabama pastor for watering flowers. And that's why I played the 60 Minutes piece. Anyway, 314, your mic is open. Three fourteen. You might be on mute.
Ellie.
Yeah. Now I can hear you.
Yeah, I've been holding since 10 o'clock.
Well.
I sent you an email.
Hold it. Wait a minute. Let me.
I sent you an email. Is a guy in Los Angeles is making tiny houses and giving away to people sleeping on the sidewalk. You didn't look at that?
Hold it. Wait a minute. I've heard of that guy, but didn't the city come along and demolish those houses?
They shouldn't have.
Well,
he was building his houses for free. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I'm familiar with, I don't know him, but I'm familiar with that story. And then the city came along and demolished those houses. But, however, the city of Los Angeles now has their own tiny house community.
I understand, but that don't mean that somebody else can't build homes and give them away to people that need them.
Well, that's true.
That's what you're doing.
Hold on now. I'm refreshing my peanut hole. Let
so
me put
just
in
look at the video. There's a lot of stuff in this video. So poverty in the U.S.
Right,
and I'm looking at this deal where this guy was watering his neighbor's flower. Here's some more examples of police overdoing things.
Well, now,
wait a minute. Here's a man out here with a water hose. The ground is wet everywhere. The driveway is wet everywhere. Ain't no fool going to be breaking into a house standing outside watering the damn flowers.
I agree.
In
well,
the vehicle parked
article,
in the driveway, all the cops had to do was run the plates.
True.
A neighbor came out, a white lady, and said, yeah, we see him. He's a friend with the neighbor. These idiots called police officers nowadays is crazy as hell. That's why you don't want to have no national police department. What you need to do, people, is control the one that you're paying for. Simple as that.
I agree. If we do not need a national police
If a person is not committing a crime, what the hell do you want to... Why do they want to give you anything other than their name? They ain't going to give you your social security number. I wouldn't have gave them my date of birth. I said, I want to speak to a lawyer.
Right.
But that's the problem.
Well,
people want to have authority over others, but the right authority, which starts at the home, goes into the school, is never established the way it should be. In all the cases, many cases, but not enough. Then they're trying to think of some damn charges, the level on him, after everything that has been checked out proved to be true. Here's a man standing up there with a water hose.
And he lived right across the street.
He stayed across the street.
Yeah, right across the street. But he's going to
talk about
obstructing
government. No, government, you obstructing this man's life, his liberties.
Now, they did drop the charges, though.
That don't mean nothing. They still put him through an ordeal. He needs to sue.
Yeah, well, he did experience that. You are correct.
Needless ordeal. He said it was racial profiling. They said they weren't. Well, he got a right to believe it was. I tell you what, this country is so messed up now, these damn Democrats and these real idiot Republicans. Something's going to come down. FBI messing with the, once again, I gave you some more videos on the Amish and the Mennonites.
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm in my mail right now because I was looking for that last article. Hold on, let me put in your name again. All right, what's the latest?
Yeah, it should be in your inbox.
Hold on, wait a minute.
Today.
Now, this is Exodus.
Good information.
Yeah, I scrolled for today and I refreshed it.
It might have been from a guy named Lee. It was 10:20. What time was it? Oh man, this is 4:27 this morning. It was then 5:27 your time. Poverty in the U.S.
Okay,
Richmond, Waco, Texas, Mennonites, and the Amish.
All right, let me put in the keywords because I got your name, email address, and nothing's dated today with that. Could you send it again? Because I didn't refresh your page, scrolled, and everything. I didn't delete nothing. Let me look at my spam.
It'd probably be in your spam.
Nope, it's not in the spam. Not my spam.
All right, I'm going to send it to you again. Maybe you ain't on that.
I
figured you'd want to see that information.
Yeah, it all right. All right, now I got it. Okay. All right, yeah, probably in U.S., Richmond, Virginia, Los Angeles, Waco, Texas, Mennonite.
Yeah, you on here. L.A., the first one went out with you, L.A., podcast.
All right, I got it right in front of me right now. Yeah, Ford, probably in U.S., Richmond, Virginia, Los Angeles. And I'm scrolling
the first
down, probably in U.S. Bing portal in the world's richest country.
Somebody might be hijacking your email, man. You got to watch out who you associate with.
Yeah, they've been doing stuff lately. All right, meet the Mennonites inside.
You know, they live just like they've been living for 1,000 years. Speak the language. They don't have no electricity. But this guy in Los Angeles,
I think he's the last example.
He's the last example on that clip in Los Angeles on where you're talking about. Let's see, poverty in the U.S. I think he's the last feature. And that little cabin he got, it has a solar.
Mm-hmm.
And even have a burger law.
All right,
they talk about people sleeping in their corners. That's a shame, though. Here they got the damn border wide open, bringing in all these damn illegals. You got Americans that going through that. I mean, that's a bunch of bull crap. That don't make no damn sense whatsoever. And see, Trump was trying to fix that. They don't like that.
There's only so
they
much
like
you can do in 4 years. All right. Poverty in the USA, being poor in the world's richest country.
See, here's the thing. That one guy's a computer engineer. But shit, they hired computer engineers coming from India, paying them
mm-hmm.
less. Well, here's the point. Them damn liberals and leftists want to raise minimum wage up to $20 an hour. But what happens when you raise minimum wage up, income up? Well, the people, the landlords, they're going to raise theirs. The stores,
right.
They're going to raise their prices. They
Everybody
all raise their
price.
You can't get away. You know, it's a funny thing out there in the technical areas. These technical people, these STEM people out in California is complaining about they can't hardly make in the money that they make.
Right. I love it.
I've heard of a guy
getting
$2,000 a month apartments for $2,000 a month. God damn. Or more.
Right.
But anyway, I just want to let you know you got that. I'm going to get on.
Yeah. Thanks for the one of those things I already read. But thanks for the update on that.
All right, I'll see you later. Have a nice
weekend. Okay, have a good weekend, Bianchi. All right. So I'm going to wrap it up right now. We got Floor College. Anybody interested? What is Floor College? Floor College, we're going to build, if you want to learn how to build step by step, all right, I'll send you the plans that we're going to use to build a tiny house. Now, this is part of our Suzu, you know. We're not asking any money, but we're asking for some of your time. So if you're interested, we'll see the plans. Then we'll make appointments for a Zoom call. And we'll take a look at the plans And then we're going to break those plans down by parts. The first part are the floor. It's the floor. Because you have to, after you get the floor constructed, you know, you got to build up on it, and then once you complete, you got the tiny house. So call me, text me, leave a note up on, what do you call it, Facebook, our Facebook page. And then we'll enroll you, doesn't cost you a penny, into Floor College. We'll explain to you how the whole thing works, and then the Zoom calls, and then the actual building of a floor. And after we finish with the floor, we'll go with the walls and on up to a completed building. On that note, everyone have a good day, rest of the day, and great weekend.